Hey, welcome to the Going Deeper podcast. My name is Robbie, and this is episode 21, which is just crazy. So it's like every week it just keeps going up one more number. It's weird how that happens.
Amazing.
Yeah, so joining me today is JD.
Hello.
And Jeff.
Good morning.
And we have a new guest here in our studio, and joining us for the very first time is Mary Jean Butler.
Good morning.
Well, we are so grateful to have you. I know there's been a lot of complaints, mostly from my wife, that we do not have a woman on the podcast. But you're a school teacher.
Yes.
So really, you've suggested you're here just to...
Classroom management.
Yeah, keep us in line.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you teach? What do you do? And
well, I'm a second grade teacher at Fairfield Local. I've been there for 12 years. I was at Hillsborough for 12 years. My husband is Randy. I have three children. I serve here in, well, two different areas, the visual arts ministry, and I also serve in the nursery and starting to take on some new roles also. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about some of those new roles that you're taking on. Maybe you can enlighten us into some of that.
Well, I guess our kickoff meeting is tonight, but I'm going to be director of the community ministry. So that's going to be a stretch for me, something new, but I'm really excited about it.
Well, that's fantastic. That's awesome. So as you come in, I guess, we just kind of talk back and forth. So there's just, feel free to chime in at any point. We'll ask you, but we're so grateful that you would you join us today. And now for all the women that were concerned, there was just guys talking. You really need to balance this out.
Okay,
tell us where we've been wrong, and correct us, get us back on track. So before we start into this, I found the most amazing news article. And as I do every week.
Absolutely.
And so this one, though, somebody asked the U.S. Geological Survey. So, all the volcanic eruptions that are happening in Hawaii. Somebody asked, can you roast marshmallows over top of them? And they actually responded, which I was surprised. So they responded and they said, I guess that's E-R-M. We're going to have to say, no, that's not safe. Please don't try. So in case anybody was wondering, you cannot roast a marshmallow over top of volcanic, something about sulfuric acid and, I don't know. I kind of failed chemistry. So that was...
One would think that being that close to a lava flow might not be the smartest thing in general.
Well, and again, who's going to find a stick that long?
Like, you're losing everything.
Is it really not possible? Or is it simply not advisable?
Well, they said if the vent is emitting a lot of SO2 and H2S, so that hydrogen sulfide. Again, I actually failed chemistry, so that would taste bad. And if you add sulfuric acid, in vogue, for example. To sugar, you get a pretty spectacular reaction. So, it sounds like you might actually die.
Okay. So you really have to want a s'more, right?
Yeah, I mean that you got problems.
You got to be desperate for a s'more.
Some people are all about s'mores. I mean, like I'd fight somebody for a donut, but I'm not a s'mores guy. But
oh yeah, like no, one of our you see everybody's got those early marriage stories where you like don't have money, so you do things that are like fun on the sly, So like my wife and I used to turn on the burners on our oven and literally roast marshmallows over them.
Nice.
As a way of making like homemade dirt cheap s'mores, that required no external fire. So it was, yeah, that was, it's kind of like the early,
it's an electric stovetop too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like just roasted them up, man.
You do what you got to do.
I have actual pictures of my wife, like turning a marshmallow on a fork over our,
I'm not sure why we think marshmallows are actually food. Like if you think about the consistency of what they are and then you stick them in a microwave and they literally explode, I'm like, you're putting that in you. I'll buy a whole bag of them. Like somebody who's drinking hot chocolate water. When we just call it hot chocolate water. And we're like, you know what this could use? Sugar puffs on top of it. Remarkable. So absolutely remarkable. Well, hey, this past weekend was our annual Memorial Day message. Jeff, I'm not sure. You're wondering how I'm going to transition this.
Yeah. Good luck to you.
Watch it happen. All right. So, but this past weekend was our annual Memorial Day message. And really, I know for a lot of people, this is a message that a lot of people look forward to. And usually something around, service and sacrifice. And this year, we focused a lot on the Vietnam War, and the movie and really book, We Were Soldiers, mm-hmm. Which I remember seeing in the theater years ago and just being so blown away by that. But I guess talk to me a little bit about why for us here, the Memorial Service is kind of something that we go all out for and what we do, why we do that.
Well, this has really become a tradition for us over the years. And there are a number of facets to that. Obviously, the transfer from what our servicemen and women do for us, and the whole idea of service and sacrifice, the transfer to Christianity is obvious because that's what Jesus was all about. Especially when you think about our focus verse for this lesson series, Matthew 20:28, where he said, "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve." And so service was at the heart of what drove Jesus to leave heaven and come to earth, and sacrifice as well, because that verse goes on to say, and to give his life as a ransom for many. And so service and sacrifice are at the heart of Christianity. But I also think it's important for us as Christian people, because there's another thing that I think is at the heart of Christianity, and that is gratitude. As a Christian, we should be the most grateful people on earth because of the grace we've received and for what God was willing to send his Son into the world to do for us. And I think the same is true for us as citizens. We need to be grateful for what those servicemen and women do for us every day and for the freedom that we have because they purchased it with their service and their sacrifice. And so I have a real strong feeling about that, and I'm really glad that Mary Jean's with us today, because she had a son who was deployed, and I remember a lot of prayers about Brian and about the time that he spent overseas, and so she has a perspective that I don't even have. My father was a long-term Navy man. He did his 4-year stint, and then he did, I can't remember if it's 20 or 25 in the reserves. And so when I was small, we spent parts of our summers at different naval bases around the country. And so in some way, I guess that was kind of ingrained into me. But I think that attitude of gratitude is something that every American ought to have for the freedom we have. And that freedom is not free. It comes at a severe cost. And we have to understand that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary Jean, would you be willing to talk a little bit about that? Like, what was it like to be home on the other side of that sacrifice?
It was probably our family's roughest time ever, because he went in at the very beginning of the he had been in the service for about 6 months, so he was still in training when he first went to Afghanistan, and he was the first round in Afghanistan. He was the 101st Airborne, and so, you know, he drove a fuel truck, so that's like a bomb waiting to happen. And we would go sometimes, one time 10 weeks without hearing from him at all. Wow. He was there 6 months, came home 4, and then we invaded Iraq. And so he was back there again. And he was in Iraq for a total of 2.5 years. So he was out of 6 years in, he was overseas almost 4 years. So it was trying. telephone would ring four o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, and you know everybody's running the phone because you knew it was Brian calling, and you might not have heard from him for a while. So I guess what, and my family has always been military. My dad retired military with 40 some years in. My son-in-law is still in the military, and I've got a nephew in the military. So it was always, it's always been a part of our lives, but it's really different when you have someone in that combat zone. And you know they're sleeping under their truck, and you know eating a meal a day, and you know you hear the stories, and you know he doesn't tell them, but you hear the stories from everyone else, and yeah, it's and they come back changed. They come back changed.
What do you think helps you get through those that 10-week stint, things like that? What are
and I have said this my small group got me through that because there were times that I couldn't pray and I just couldn't. I couldn't do anything, and I depended on them to pray for me and to pray with me. And that's the only thing that got us through as a family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or got me through was my small group. And I think Randy was the same way. We really grew close with that group of people that we were bonded with at the time.
Yeah.
That life group. Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things that we had the opportunity to do just back in February, my cousin, Macy, left high school and enlisted directly into the Marines. And she went for her basic training, you know, which is obviously significant. You know, the Marine basic training is really difficult. And so when we had the chance to go to her graduation, you know, all of us kind of jumped at the opportunity to go. We went down to South Carolina to watch the graduation. And I think what you walk away from an experience like that with is a deep sense of appreciation for people who put themselves through that amount of work, effort, and potential sacrifice, because there's the sacrifice on the front end of somebody who goes and just literally puts themselves through 13 weeks of that kind of training and learning and physical exertion with the ever-present potential that they could be called into some greater level of sacrifice almost immediately upon, you know, graduation from that. I mean, you know, I obviously went to high school with Mary Jean's son, Brian. He was a year ahead of me in school. And so I knew him well. We played football together. Like, and so when he went, I knew somebody over there, and you do think about that. And so, but you walk away from experiences like Macy's graduation, or from, you know, for praying for somebody that you knew all through high school, you know, with this deep sense of appreciation for the fact that they gave that section of their life up to serve our country, and to ensure that there are people who are ready to protect folks like me who have not ever entered the military. There's a desire to show gratitude to those folks, and to be very grateful for what they've been willing to do on behalf of the people that live in this nation.
One of the other reasons that that we've done this Memorial Day service the way we've done it over the past few years is that a lot of times our servicemen and women will not tell their own story. That's something that's deeply personal and a lot of times very painful for them. And so people that don't go into the service or don't have that experience don't really understand. And so I felt that it was important for us to tell the stories for them in some way, because we're at a point now in our history where there is no draft, and it's all volunteer. And so I believe the numbers right now are somewhere around 2% of the American populace actually serves in the armed services. So that means 98% of the people don't know and don't understand. And a lot of those 98% of those people take it for granted what we have. And they don't realize the kind of sacrifice and the kind of time and effort and all that goes into just the training itself that's difficult, and that tries you psychologically as well as physically to get you to a place where you can be in a battle zone and not break. And that's tough stuff. And so I think it's important for us each year to just take that one Sunday and set it aside and tell some of the stories that a lot of our people would never otherwise hear. And so we've picked stories from many different wars over the years. This was the first year I decided to try and tackle the Vietnam War. And I felt like it was important for our people to have some understanding. Agree or disagree, that's for each individual, but to have at least some understanding of what drove us to be involved in that conflict. And why it was, even though many people look back on it today and say, you know, what was the point of that? And many people look back on it today and see it as a defeat, and see it in very negative terms. I wanted people to understand at least what drove many people to think at first this was an important thing to be involved in. And I think we're still grappling with many of the questions that were raised today. I mean, you think about it, when we began Desert Storm, one of the things that the president said when he was announcing the fact that we were going in to Desert Storm, he was very clear to the American people, this will not be another Vietnam. And you think about it, that was 20-some years after Vietnam had ended, and yet it still cast such a shadow over any other involvement that he felt it necessary to explain to the American people, we're not going to go down that road again. And I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from that war. And one of the most important lessons that I think America, I hope, has learned is agree or disagree with the government's decision to send people into war. You can agree or disagree with that. But how you treat those people that we sent, there should be no disagreement about how we treat them when they come home. Because what happened to a lot of our service people when they came home from Vietnam was inexcusable. They were not treated well, and it's sad.
One of the things that I think is important about these lessons, because, you know, I was a history major in college, and there's the oft repeated, you know, those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it, phrase that gets bandied about a lot. But there is a very biblical reality that throughout the Old Testament, in the Psalms, in the books of history, in the proclamations of Moses, in the declarations of the kings at different points, there is this call to constantly remember what God has done. And there is this call to remember the people that he has used to help him get it done. And while I think we have to be very careful, I really do. I think we have to be very careful not to allow our nation or patriotism in and of itself to become God. We have to guard, I think, very, very strongly against that. Because our government and our nation can be wrong. It can be corrupted. It can be mistaken. And so we have to guard against, like, you know, an unwillingness to see the possible mistakes and misuses of power within our government. That's unwise. At the same time, God has used this nation for great good throughout its history, and God has used people in service to liberate captives, to protect people all over the world from, you know, religious and political and economic oppression. I mean, and when we take the time to remember the fact that God has done that, those things through this through this nation and through the people who serve as a part of it, we take the time to do something very biblical, and that's to be grateful for what God is doing and has done, and to remember that in every situation, whether we can recognize it in the moment or not, God is working, and he still works on national and global levels. He still works in personal hearts and lives all over the world. He is doing things on a daily basis that are trained to draw people closer to him. And he uses nations that send people in to serve to make a difference in that way. And so there's something deeply biblical about remembering and showing gratitude for those whom God has used to take care of and protect and ensure the safety and freedom of people.
And I think that's one of the questions that America is, if in fact we are God honoring, that's one of the questions that we will always have to grapple with is, do we have a moral obligation or a duty to protect those who can't protect themselves, regardless of where it is in the world? You think about it, that's what drove us in part in World War II. And you think about the tyranny and the horrible tyranny that was happening during World War II. And we stepped in and did something about that. And I think, you know, as we look back on that was good and that was right. Even though it cost us dearly in terms of human lives. But sometimes that is the cost, as sad as it is.
Yeah. And I think, Jeff, you had mentioned before we started recording that kind of it's an easy transition between what our men and women in the armed services do, of the sacrifice and service, to what we need to do as Christians. Could you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you read some of these stories, and it doesn't matter what war it is, when you read some of the stories of our service people, the bond that develops within the units between those men and women who serve together, it's tremendous. And there's this sense that drives many of them that I don't want to let my buddy down. In fact, some of the accounts that I read indicated that you know, when you're in battle, you don't think about your country, you're not thinking about the flag anymore, you're not really even thinking about your family. You're thinking about that buddy beside you, that person that has your back and you have theirs, and you don't want to let them down. And I thought, what a cool transfer to the church family. If that's how we felt about each other, and that's the attitude we took into our daily life, that no matter what, I'm not going to let my church family down. And how I act outside of church, how I act in public, I'm going to watch my behavior, because I don't want to do anything that brings a bad name or brings any kind of disparagement on the church family. And if they're hurt or if they're in need, I'm going to be there to support them. And some of the particular story that we dealt with this Sunday from the Vietnam War, you saw a lot of that. There were a lot of guys who risked their lives to drag a buddy to safety. I mean, this was a battle in which our men could have easily been wiped out. In fact, there was a point in the story, and this is actually true, where they were just before they went to Vietnam, their unit got renamed to the 7th Cavalry, which was George Armstrong Custer's cavalry unit number. That was scary for some of them, because we all know what happened to Custer. I mean, it was a total annihilation. Nobody survived that. And they thought the same was going to happen to them. And yet you have these soldiers making sure that nobody got left behind. Everybody came off that field, whether dead or alive. and many of them put their own lives at risk to make sure that buddy who had already died made it off the field. And just, it's a tremendous amount of self-sacrifice that went on during that battle.
Yeah. You know, all these years later, after having seen the movie We Are Soldiers, the image that stands out to me, and Mary Jean, you kind of, you know, talking about your life group being there for you. You know, what stands out to me actually most in that movie was the wives. And and that, you know, they were trying to deliver, I think it was the kind of the death notice that was coming, and they're like, oh, we don't have anybody to do this. And the wives grouped together and started going from house to house, whoever needed, and they were there to support each other on that. And so it's interesting how the conflict, literal conflict that their husbands had found themselves in, these wives were joined together in community. And so that just always stood out to me. I mean, it's been years since I saw that movie in the theaters, and that still sticks out to me, mm-hmm. is that need for community in the face of such suffering and hurt, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The colonel's wife did not want those messages being delivered by somebody unknown.
It was a taxi driver in the movie. Drivers. I don't know if that was how it actually happened, but yeah.
Apparently it was, because every other aspect I've seen of the movie tracks Lieutenant Colonel Moore's book almost to a T. But in the movie, that was the cool thing, that his wife did not want those death notices being hand delivered by a stranger. She insisted on delivering them herself. And I can't imagine having to do that. Mm-hmm. It would be awful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in that there's this idea that, and JD, kind of playing off what you were saying about this need to remember, there's also this need as we sacrifice and serve, something that's almost a lost art in our culture, is hospitality, that we are hospitable to people, that we are welcoming of them, that we bring them in, that we, you know, and I think that was that embodiment of that, where they're joining together and coming together. And it's part of what, I mean, Christians have been doing for thousands of years now, is joining together, meeting in homes and celebrating, eating meals, taking communion together. This has been something that's been vitally important. And it's interesting because I think you start looking at the culture and, you know, just thinking as a history buff myself, Vietnam didn't happen in a bubble. It was, mm-hmm. 20, 30 years in the making. And then was still, like you mentioned, Jeff, still influencing decisions into the 90s,
sure.
of what we're going to do, and to understand that. And so, and to understand this kind of cultural progression of throwing off the chains of quote unquote oppression from religion. And then it's the sexual revolution and all this, and that you will find freedom, true freedom in that. And then really it just comes up empty. There's nothing there in the face of the communist atheism. It's hollow. And so now it's this, there's one podcast JD and I were listening to, and there's now the new religion has moved past atheism into politics. And this is where you see our world so polarized, but we've created the new, where we used to have in kind of the '80s, the Christian ghetto, everything was Christian, and the Christian fundamentalists. And now we have this incredible, almost liberal ghetto, and that, we don't really care what you think. As long as you say the right things on your social media page, then we're okay with that. And so all of that to say is that what it's done, this hyper-individualism, has actually stripped us of the reality that we need each other, and that I need to, if greater love has no man to lay down his life for a friend, as Jesus said, and I tend to listen to what he says, then I have to realize that looks like, man, I better be worried about the person next to me. I better care for them. This is important, is to say that. So
it's important in everyday life too, not just those major life events. It's important, every day of every hour of every day that you're hospitable, that you reach out to people. And you were talking about how the Vietnam War, how the guys came back to really tough times and a lot of judgment. I remember picking Brian up at the airport. Our whole family would go to get him, and he would get off the plane with his uniform on. And even if he didn't have his uniform on, you can tell a military guy when they're on. They carry themselves differently. And it was amazing the warmth, the thank yous, the embracing that he got during that time, and even during the time of conflict. So it was just like the polar opposite of what I experienced during the Vietnam War when I saw those pictures of soldiers coming home. And that was just, it was very heartwarming. And it meant not only to him, but to all of us, the service is worth it. What we gave and what we sacrificed, we're doing it and it's appreciated. Yeah. I can't imagine the guys from Vietnam coming home.
Mm-hmm. I think there was a great, I think fear even coming, and I was young, but I remember Desert Storm, and I remember even my mom talking about that, like, we don't want that to happen again in that how we treated those men coming back. Mm-hmm. And now, obviously there's people that still are, I think there's miserable people anyways that are going to mm-hmm. be rude about those things. But to understand that there's a difference between, the soldier and somebody giving that order of going there. That guy didn't decide that. Mm-hmm. For whatever, he wanted to serve his country. He wanted to do something above and beyond themselves. They wanted scholarship, whatever it was, to join. They didn't decide. No, I don't think anybody signs up like, hey, I want to go into combat. That's, that's not what you're trying to do. You just want to make a difference and help. And JD, you were talking about that, how much good has been done mm-hmm. By that. But I think there's almost I want to say, a counter reaction to that we do need to go and thank people and do that. And, I spent a semester, all of one semester at Virginia Military Institute before I was like, not for me. But it was interesting just being in uniform and people coming up to us. And I'm like, I'm not even serving yet. It's glorified ROTC and people were thanking us. I'm like, please don't do that. Like, there's other people to thank, not us, So that's even experiencing a little bit of that is humbling. And you're just like, man, I don't deserve that, for people. But I think when you understand that freedom that's been purchased, for you, how important that is.
It's kind of interesting that you mentioned that, you didn't feel like you'd done anything yet. When Macy came back from graduation and she came to church, one Sunday morning, and she was in her dress blues, and a lot of people came up and thanked her, and later on she said to me, I haven't done anything yet, I just made it through boot camp, I haven't actually done anything yet. And I thought to myself, yeah, you have, you've done a lot, and who knows where you're going next, and you have no control over that, so you've made yourself available for this country. Mm-hmm. And that's something huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that brings it to the idea of humility of, I think you see that embodied in a lot of men in service, men and women. I haven't done anything yet. Well, I think humility is not this, low opinion of yourself, but an accurate one. And that realizing there are more people that have given everything, paid with their very life, but the fact that you're willing to do that, I say I haven't done anything because it was ROTC. It was just a uniform. It wasn't even, like I hadn't been through boot camp or anything. there was a few moments I wish I had, I'm like, I have something at the end of it. I've got some $14,000 combat boots, but whatever.
But that uniform embodies and represents all of those other people that did give. Absolutely. And did give it all. So when they're thanking, they're thanking,
right,
the idea of what you're going to do or what others have done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I think to some degree, that extends to those who serve in a civil format as well. I mean, one of the cool things, just on Memorial, like it was cool this on Memorial Day, you know, we have several of the local firefighters, and policemen, sheriff, you know, that come out here to church, and one of the firefighters, has kind of taken up a little bit of an interest in my son, and he said, "Hey, you know, would you mind bringing him up here on Memorial Day? And we've got some trucks that we're going to do some stuff with, you know, he could get to see him." And my son is like an animal for anything machine. And so I was like, yeah. So I took him up and I mean, he took my son for, you know, a ride in the big tower truck, and it, you know, he got to go up the ladder and stuff. And there was just fun things for him to do. And it was, he's 2 years old, but man, he wore that fire hat, like the little plastic fire hat they gave him for the rest of the day. And, you know, it was, there's something about being connected with people who on a daily basis put their life on the line, you know, and it's, I think it's one of the reasons, you know, why, you know, we have really tried. And I don't know, you know, I don't know that we're always perfect at it. I'll just say we're not perfect at it, but we've tried really hard to ingrain into this church a real culture of heavy service, self-sacrificial service, because like on a week in, week out basis, I don't want a volunteer to look at me as a staff member and say, "I work harder than that guy." You know, I don't want people to look at what we do here, you know, for the kingdom of God, something with eternal ramifications, and say, "Well, that's not important enough." You know, I want to project, much as those guys projected onto my son, the seriousness and importance about what they do, because they're explaining all the different things that they use and all the equipment and how it's useful to him, and you know what his 2-year-old brain's able to understand is one thing, but they're talking about going into burning buildings to save lives, and you know, on our end, you know, kind of applying that same message to the church, we have an utter responsibility that the next generation of potentially Christian children will see that level of commitment and drive in us to be the kind of people Jesus has called us to be, to do the kind of work that Jesus has called us to do, and to run into the burning building of people's lives with the hope of Jesus and with the hope of an eternity with God. And that's got to be something that drives us and impassions us to be the very best we can be and work as hard as we can on behalf of the kingdom of God. And so for me, as I watched my son just be in awe of like these fire trucks and these firemen that go out and literally we go uptown. It was hilarious. So we leave the fire station after like an hour and a half of playing around with all these trucks and, you know, Max and taking rides in the squad truck and everything. Like he was just in awe. And we go up to the Memorial Day service at the center of town. And right at the beginning of it, a kid faints like 10, 15 feet away from us. And the squad comes to like treat him. And so not only did he get to see them, you know, like in the cool fire station with all the gear and get to ride around in a truck, but then he got to watch them do what they do, provide emergency rescue help to a person in need, you know, and he was just standing there watching it, just enthralled seeing, you know, this guy that he was just hanging out with now taking care of a person. And there's to some degree or another, I think we as Christians need to take that readiness, that willingness, that sacrificial heart and apply it to the way we live out our faith so that the next generation of kids that are coming behind us will have that same sense of this is about making an eternal difference in the world.
Yeah. No, I think you kind of summed everything up nicely right there for what we need to do. I think, you know, we've talked about a lot of themes just kind of as we wrap up. And I think there needs to be, and I think Jeff, you put it, what's worth dying for? Mm-hmm. Man, if we're just following Jesus just because it's a ticket to heaven someday, we're missing the right now, the right here. And if we can look over people that are hurting, man, we've missed it, because Jesus didn't look over you when you were hurting. Mm-hmm. And so that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He didn't wait for us to get it right. And we shouldn't be waiting for other people to get it right before we serve them and love them and do that. So it looks like we are out of time. Mary Jean, thank you so much for being here with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And hopefully you'll be back. We didn't scare you off too much.
Not too much.
All right.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Next time the questions will be deeper, more probing.
More probing.
You know, we'll send them to you ahead of time. And it's good. Well, and until next week, we hope you join us. And again, if you have any comments, questions, anything you want further, you want to put in your input, we'd love to hear it. And you can email us at info@goodnewsgathering.org. Or if you're here on a Sunday, fill out one of our communication cards and you can drop that in the back and we will get with you. So until next week, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Take care, guys.